Are we back on?
It's starting now.
Yeah. Okay. Sol?
Yes?
1 minute of silence.
We cannot have a minute of silence when I'm recording.
Okay.
I can hang up and start again. You can have a minute of silence.
No, we don't need. So is it 1 minute that it can't go more than 1 minute?
I think it's 30 seconds.
30 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think seconds before that.
Okay, is it better now?
Well, there's no crackling, so
sounds good.
Great. Okay, so while everybody's coming on, we'll just do a little reviewing here from last time. As you all know, this is our last class, except we will have one more class on January the 9th at the same time, at the same phone number, for anyone who wants to share their 5 minute.
So, Les, can I ask a question?
Yes.
On the rubric, I got handouts, but nowhere does it tell how to use it. I don't know if I got all the information I need.
Did you get, there's a handout that gives some, let's see, what is on that handout? Number 9, the instructions were given out verbally, so they're not on that sheet. Basically, what you do is you use the one that we gave you as a model, and you determine 3 areas or 4 or 5, or however many areas you want to assess, and you put those down the left-hand side, and then across the top you put 3 different levels of that of ability in each one of those categories that goes down the left-hand side. So on handout 3, you'll see the one we put together, the rubric. And you can use those same items on the left, or you can put your own in there. And then across the top, you'll just determine a low, a medium, and a high level in each of those areas that you determine you want to assess.
Okay. So it's left a assessment.
Yes, yeah, left up to you, yeah.
Okay. Then I understand.
Okay. Okay. So we were talking about teaching strategies last week, and in just a minute, Anita's going to talk some more about teaching strategies, so I'm just going to review what we talked about a little bit last week. We ran out of time at the end, so it was a little abbreviated, but we talked about how to get going and what activities you might want to think about using to start out with your presentation, and we talked about using questions, and I reminded you all that if you ask a question, you need to get chance to process the question. If you just ask a rhetorical question and continue on with your information, everybody's brain is trying to answer that question, and there's no opportunity to either speak it or write it or tell your neighbor the answer or something. So questions are a way people do get going, but they're not always the best unless you give people a chance to use to process the question. Okay, the second one we talked about was telling people what skill they might be able to use or acquire through your presentation and how they might use to kind of whet their interest in learning. Another strategy would be to have some kind of an assessment that could be a concept map, as we've done in this class, or it could be checking with a partner, your neighbor. It could be interviewing somebody in the class with a handout that they walk around and find someone to interview if you want to keep people moving. Or it could be a written reflection piece that they write, and then you collect that, and then you, by reading that, you can determine kind of what their background information knowledge is in that area, or what they might be interested in learning, or just kind of where they might be developmentally in terms of that topic. Or you can copy something that you've seen in somebody else's workshop that really worked well and try to do that, so that you don't even have to be even original about it. If you saw something that you thought was really successful, just use it again. And then we talked about what it was and how you create a jigsaw pattern. And basically, you divide up into smaller groups, people in a group, and you give each group a separate topic to discuss. And all the four or five people in that group become experts in that one topic, and then after a certain length of time, you separate, and each one person from each of the small groups goes into a new, forms a new group, so there'll be one person from each of the smaller groups who's the expert, and then you have a new group of five or six people, four or five people, each one of whom is an expert in one of the subtopics, and then they, in turn, teach everybody else in their group what they learned in their smaller group of everybody having some information that nobody else has, and so everybody is a contributor, and nobody is quietly listening to other people speak because everybody needs to be teaching everybody in their group what they know, so that way you get full involvement, and it's a good way to get students working together as a mixer. So those are just some strategies that we shared, and then in your handout you have some other ideas about the right brain, the left brain, and I think I did mention last week that you need to be thinking about both kinds of brains, the kind of brain that likes lots of order and structure, and the kind of brain that likes to of intuition and not necessarily approach things in a linear way. And you always have both kinds of brains in any audience that you might have, so try to think of ways to involve each kind of brain so that each person will leave with some part of that presentation being fulfilling to their way of thinking or their way of processing information. And Anita did mention also the visual learner and the kinesthetic learner and the auditory learner and the visual learner, and that's another way of thinking about people in your audience. So I think that's about what we talked about. Does anybody remember anything else that I didn't mention? Okay, so that's the extent of my review for tonight, and then Anita's going to share with you now some of her teaching strategies that she's used with her students.
Well, okay, so, excuse me just a second.
Celeste, some of the things that we didn't review were the seven things that Anita gave, which were different approaches to learning, you know, like the logical, mathematical way and the social interpersonal way and the way of a person who works best by himself, the intrapersonal.
That's right. She those were Howard Gardner's ideas, right, Anita?
And you can find variations on, I don't know if those were exactly his, but you can find variations on that theme right on the website. You can Google learning styles and that sort of thing, and you just get so much information that's really helpful. It's just amazing what we can get on the Internet now. That just took a lot of research before, buying a lot of books.
Amen.
And it's at our fingertips. So it's just try to think of a topic that you're interested in and put in a couple words, and it doesn't take long before you have some really concise.
Anita?
Yeah.
In the last time we went through that in some of my in-service, he had developed a new way of learning, and he called it the intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
He was acknowledging the spiritual aspect of
Hawk
kind of learning.
Oh, I didn't know he had. I knew that somebody, you know, that people had found other ones too, but that's great.
Well, now you mentioned it, I'm not exactly sure it was.
Yeah.
Well,
it was.
He does have the eighth one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot more too, because it can be very, very subtle. But just if we get beyond just thinking that there's one way to learn, then we're getting to first base anyway.
Well, we also know that there are four lower bodies and there are four different, you know, chakras.
Yeah.
We can learn through different chakras.
That's right. We can learn
at different levels of the four lower bodies. So. You know, we have that understanding in addition to what other people have as well.
And in Montessori, we recognize that we're learning in different levels at the same time. We don't do the physical and then, okay, now we're going to go do the mind, now we're going to go do something else, that we are moving and we're supporting cognitive development at the same time we're supporting physical development and social development, and that's the whole point of it, is that, that it's so integrated and it's normal, because that's the way the body is. We don't just do one thing isolated from everything else, and none of us are all one certain kind of person. We are a mix of all those kinds. We just have more gifts and graces in some areas than another, but the balance is the goal. And so can we teach in a balanced way that, that is recognizing that all of that is out there, I think, is a huge start. But to talk about strategies, among the handouts that Celeste gave, she went over pages 10, 11, 12 last time, but there's another group of papers that are that were scanned in, and so they look like they're, you know, been Xeroxed or something, and they don't necessarily, well, they have page numbers, page number 1 through 6.
Okay.
Yeah, oh. But you have to go up and do something. Somebody.
Oh, mine came with everything else without a problem, and I just thought, oh, here's a wonderful resource for you, and you haven't received it. Okay, well, what it is.
Well, we've received it, we just haven't printed it.
Oh, I see. So you can read
it. Yeah, I'm getting it up on my computer right now.
Okay,
while,
it's
so
worth
that we can...
seeing if you can. I don't know. The reason I was going to mention that I think it's worthwhile is because it kind of analyzes different strategies, such as a presentation strategy, which is basically a lecture. And, I mean, it could be a lecture that includes a demonstration, and it could have illustrations or slides or PowerPoint or, you know, things to support a lecture, but the heart of it is a lecture. And into what, you know, the definition, what are the strengths, when do you want to use this, what are the limitations, what are the drawbacks of using this, and then it talks about that format of presentation. The next format, so point 2, is active strategies such as debates, interviews, role play, skits. And it talks about when this might be appropriate, how, what it is, what are the strengths of this form of strategy, and what are the some limitations. And so I found it interesting to read through that. The third type is an interaction strategy, discussion groups, huddles, sensitivity training, committees, learning teams, that sort of thing, more interactive. And then it talks about what are the strengths and limitations of that form of that strategy, that form of teaching. So what I was going to say about that is that it's not a matter of, oh, which is the best way or which do I like best. It's not about either one of those. It's about what is my topic and what are my purposes? What am I teaching and what am I trying to do by giving this 30-minute talk or this 5-minute talk or this 6-week class? What are my purposes and how can those purposes be best fulfilled? And if it's something that contains a lot of content that people simply, information they need to have, then probably doing a discussion sensitivity training, huddle, brainstorming isn't really what you want to do, because you get off track and you have a few people that dominate all the time, and you as the person with the content and with the information, you know, are in a level playing field and you don't really give the information you need to give. So it's just a matter of having a sense of what it is you're doing and what your purpose is and how can you best fulfill that.
Is so, that little girl?
Did somebody say something to me or was that background?
Sorry. Hello, good evening, Hendrika. I'm just checking in. Sorry I'm late.
Okay, we're glad you're here.
Oh.
So if you're giving a lecture, for example, on the 7 archangels or the 7 rays or something like that, it's pretty informational, and it may be fairly given. But knowing that people have different learning styles and there's different ways that you may want to have an active component where there is some interaction with each other, like, for example, maybe you'd give some information and then have a time that there could even be a skit, or there could be a little group where they could share with each other. Excuse me. Share with each other experiences they might have had, or there could be some interaction, but it's mostly, you know, an informational session. But you might be able to think of ways that there can be a more active part of it that's a little more experiential. Of course, if you're teaching meditation, of course you would have an experience opportunity. You could teach some information and then give them an experience and then go back and teach, reinforce what you taught before, or you may branch into something new then and then experience that. So you would have a balance of things happening. So, you know, of course, it depends on your topic, and it depends on your purposes that you're trying to fulfill. So this paper, I think it's not something that I'd spend a lot of time on, but I think it's just helpful to read through it if you have it, because it's pretty informative. And as I mentioned, going to the Internet, you could go to the Internet now if you wanted to and Google teaching strategies, and you would have list after list of different ways to teach. What I find in doing that many, a lot of that kind of thing that you get really relates more to teaching someone who isn't necessarily there by their own choice, maybe a high school junior or something. So it's mostly addressing teaching children or young adults, or even college students who may not have the same reason to be there that someone who is coming to a lecture about Ascended Master topics. So the strategies are interesting to look at, but they may not relate that much, because the people that will be coming to you to learn about elementals or about the Kabbalah or about the seven archangels are probably there because they're interested in the content, what it is you have to say, or they're interested in you. It's either your topic or your person, and that's why they're there, and they come ready to learn something from you. And so that's a whole different scenario than someone who has to take, history 101. So you may find some ideas in teaching strategies, but we have kind of a special clientele, I think, that in the kind of teaching that we're doing. So to look at the traditional and the classical and the up-to-the-minute strategies are important to do, but I'll give you the experience that I have in my teaching career has been with people more like what we will encounter as we're out there on the road teaching people that want to know what you have to say, and they came because they want the information or they want to hear from you. So that has been my experience. So I'll just share a little bit of that. And one thing I found very helpful is to be a broken record. And I learned this from none other. Now, some thought she was a broken record and said the same thing a million times because she was 95 years old, and that's what old people do. But you know what? It's a wonderful strategy because people don't hear what you say the first time, and often not the second time, and often not again and again. And so if you have some very important principles, which we do have in our body of Ascended Master curriculum, we have very important principles that really can't be said, they can't be stated too many times, because they're true, they're real, and the more we know them, to just get a handle on them and to hear them again and again. And so for me to be a broken record with you, there's something that I've said every time I've had an opportunity in this class to speak to you. I've said the same thing every time. I've said there's three things you need to know. Does anybody know what my broken record has been? You need to know your
audience.
You need to know your audience. That's it. You need to know your students. You need to know who you're talking to. Absolutely. And that came from Lord Maitreya, from that dictation that was the day before our class started. or the week before, I don't know when it was, but that's what the theme that he said, know your students. You need to know them. So you need to know your students, and what else do you need to know?
Their background.
Okay, so that's more about the students, more about their background, who they are, what they know, and all that. Okay, and then there's another whole thing we need to know.
Material.
You need to know your material. Okay. And Jophiel and Uriel are the, so I read from a pearl, Jophiel and Uriel from way back, I don't know, 20 years ago or something, said you need to really, you need to know what you're talking, you need to know your subject. You are the expert, and in order to be an effective teacher, you have to know your material. Study, 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 and take it in and become it, and then you can give it out. So you need to know your students, you need to know your material, and what else do you need to know? Something else.
I would say your God presence, but I don't know if that's what you said.
Okay, well, that's close. I would say yourself. You need to know your God presence, and you probably need to know your electronic belt, too, who you are. And once you know who you are, then you have a foundation that you build. Okay, so mindfulness, and Kaspari taught that, Montessori taught that, Gautama taught that, Hermes Trismegistus taught that. To know yourself, so yourself, your students, your material. So that's been my broken record for you. That's what I've modeled for you. So I'll just point out what I've modeled for you. And so it can be said different ways, but to me, these are principles of being a teacher, are these three things. You know, I can have a list of 45,000 strategies, but if I don't have the three basics to hang that on, then I could be floundering, just looking for the perfect pill, the perfect thing, the trick that's going to work for my students. No, I need to know them, me, and the material. And then beyond that, let's see, what do I have? I have some notes here. Okay, I said that about, okay, so just a couple things that Dr. Kaspari would do in our classes. She would say the same thing so many times, and it took me maybe a half a minute to write down a whole list of things that she would always say. For example, love is the key, a million times. Mind in the making, what can we do to help? Movement is the law of their being. You have to change, teach, don't correct. I mean, these are the things that she would say over again. And so when I'm in the classroom and I have a child who's, you know, having a hard time with something, so I'm not there to correct the child. I'm there to teach them, to show them how to do it, not to say, oh, no, you've done it wrong. So these little things help remind me when I've heard them over. And when I teach, and as I said, my teaching has been mostly specialized. It's been in the area of teachers, of training teachers to teach children. There's a tremendous quantity of content that needs to be given to them through the books and through the lectures, just content that they need to know, a lot of material. And so I find myself lecturing and thinking there must be a better way to do this. But lecturing can be a very efficient way to give information out. But I break that up with a couple other things. So even though I have a lot of content that needs to be given in the academic portion of their training, then there also is demonstration where they see something being done. So there's demonstration that still can be passive for them to watch a demonstration. So get them up there and let them participate in being the one being demonstrated to. So that gives them a little activity. And then the third thing that I do is give them an experience. So what I find is when I teach them something and give them information, there's sometimes a little... they can, after, you know, 30 minutes or so, they can start getting a glaze over their eyes. And then experience where they have a chance to mix it up a little bit and to try something on their own. And then they realize it wasn't as easy as they thought. And then they come back and they're ready to listen again because their eyes and ears are more open because they've had their hands on something. So I was thinking about the topics that you all have chosen, is there something that could be hands-on? Is there something that they could do other than sit and listen to you? And you may look at your topic and think about that. And so I was thinking, well, if it's, you know, if it's on elementals, well, just experiences in nature. Maybe we go outside and spend everybody find a little place to sit for 10 minutes and then come back in and I mean, to have tuned into nature a little bit. And if anybody has anything to share with that, maybe in a small group or something, or if it's meditation, to practice silent meditation or a guided meditation and then share experiences in the large group or small group. Teaching on the violet flame, of course, experience the violet flame. Give the violet flame decree. Talk about it, what it is, then do it, and then come back and repeat what you had said before or teach a little bit more and allow them to have something to say about it. That gives them the opportunity to share and to be in a little bit of a discussion, but they're not off on some other track somewhere that gets everybody off track where they're bringing in their own agenda. You have a topic to teach. The people want to hear what you've had to say. So that's where the creativity can come in on your part to think, now, is there anything in my topic that could move them out of just being the passive listeners or anything that they could do? So when you get into your topic more and you're more comfortable with it, then it may be a good time to look at some different strategies, and you can think, how could I apply this strategy to my very special topic? You might, instead of going to the strategies and then going to your topic, go to the topic and then see if there's ideas that you might get. But that's really all I had to say. I guess one more thing is that when I think of people, we think of the four lower bodies, but I think of it in terms of people. Okay, the main thing I think about teaching is that even if I'm giving a lot of content and a lot of information about something, the purpose for me to do that, if I on my syllabus, probably purpose number one, no matter what topic I'm giving, it doesn't matter any of the topics you've chosen, I would put as my number one purpose is to support their spiritual development. Because you all have chosen spiritual topics, and we are developing. So the purpose isn't just so that they know about the archangels, but so that their spiritual development is somewhat supported by what you have shared with them. And so I think of, when I think of teaching children, we're supporting their physical development. We're supporting their cognitive development. We're supporting their emotional and social development and spiritual. But in what we're doing, spiritual development would be our main purpose. And so what can we do to support that is what I would be thinking about. What can I do to support these people, these individual souls that I have the privilege to be with? What can I do to support their development? So to think about teaching in that way is what keeps me inspired and keeps me loving to teach, because I see it as a supporting, not as me knowing everything at all, but how can I support them? So anyway.
Anita?
Yeah.
This is Marcia. I was just thinking as you were talking that kind of a real simple way to understand that as well is to think of putting tools in their hands, putting tools in the hands of their inner teacher, who really is the one that's finally getting it, you know. And no matter what we do, they've got to be taught by that inner teacher.
Yeah, I mean, screwdrivers. Let's open up the little box to get to understand. Yeah, absolutely. That's right. And to show it to yeah. So well said.
And the inner teacher is the Christ, really, so that's the spiritual part for sure.
And their inner teacher is their real teacher, and the most we can ever hope to be is an assistant. We can help support, but we're not really the teacher. Their own Christ is and has been since before they were born.
That's a neat way to think of it, that we're the teaching assistant to their inner teacher, their
we're
own teacher.
We're always the assistant, right.
Yeah.
And it puts us in a humble position. But you know what? That's the angels. I mean, we know that the angels, if we have a problem, the angels don't swoop down and save us. But if we call to them, they'll come. So we have to ask for help. And so they're willing to support us, but they're not going to take over and see to it that we learn, whether we like it or not. No, that's not how the angels work. So teachers are like angels, in my opinion. They're there to help out when somebody, you know, is asking for help. And they ask for help if they signed up for the class.
Right.
That's really all I had to say, unless anybody else has any other comments.
This is my broken record. Anita?
Yeah.
This is Alona. I've been trying to take in a lot of what you and Celeste have been saying because of the initiation that I'll be having coming up, and really trying to, you know, make sure that the presentation fits the audience in a sense. And so mm-hmm. I'm recognizing that you know, sometimes when you have something that's a high level of content, you cannot always provide something that can give them a lot of different experiences. And I think just have to hope that the information stimulates the imagination and the learning experiences on a level that you're not aware of, is what I'm thinking.
Right. And it's not that we always feel that we have to have them run around the room and play a game, but it's worth it to think about it and think if there might be something that could be done, but it doesn't mean it has to be.
Well, the one thing that I remember about going into Montessori classrooms was it was always important to provide, to set the environment. So I think in that sense that looking at the different environment, whether it's music or any kind of something for the hands or visuals, that in that sense that contributes to, you know, providing different elements in the environment for something like that.
Can I interrupt you? I was very taken with the way Pamela Hicken presented her lecture in Bozeman, the fact that she played music in the background the entire lecture.
Yeah.
I found that very effective, actually. Of course, she was talking about right brain, and she wanted everybody to be in the alpha wave, brainwave state, and so she was playing that music for that purpose, probably. But nevertheless, I thought, well, this is a nice teaching technique because it's very calming and very soothing.
Yeah, and it was
different.
It makes
it easy to listen to somebody over music.
Where in some things that could be a distractor.
It could.
So it isn't a given that is a strategy that you can't pull them out of a can and say, okay, this is how to teach. But, you know, so it's interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Something just came to my mind. We had a teacher named Leo Wood who came to the ranch and gave us some instruction on teaching a while ago, and he talked about something sounds like what you're doing about how to alternate. He talked about you need alternating times of quiet and action, like the yin and yang or the ebb and flow, or like the sine wave of the class to keep things going.
And he's done some interesting research to actually show the different brainwave states that you go in and out of. But quite frankly, I've thought about that over the years, and I know there's one college professor somewhere in Texas that's trying to use that in his classes, but I just found it difficult because every student is at a different brainwave at a different time. It's how could you possibly coordinate everybody's brainwaves? So it seemed a little obscure to use in every day, you know. But to understand that that's what the brain does, I think it's helpful. So, any other last minute before we move on?
I have a quick question. It's on the three, what you must know, yourself, your material, and your students. The student part, how are you going to get to know your students beforehand so that you can possibly prepare little side avenues for those who might surprise you if you only found out about their differences after you have begun your program? Are there ways where you can ask people before they even come to the presentation, or are there swift ways where you can pretty much gather those things after you've got them all there? I'm kind of lost on that.
Well, that's if you don't have a program. If you're doing a class that people are registering for, it's several weeks or months or some longer thing, people will send in an application, and you'll probably ask them to write a letter about a topic. You will ask for something from them, and you get to know, and that's what I do. I know my students pretty well. I interview them as well as they send in some writing on a topic. So I basically read an essay, and I interview them personally. So I really know a lot about them before I ever start. And then after the first hour of class, I know a lot more about them, just the vibration, you know. You get to but if they're young, old, what their experience, I mean, I want to know, you know, if they've been in the classroom for 40 years or they're just out of high school, you know, who, and so in a class like I do, I know a lot about my students before I start. In a class where you just put an ad in the paper, you're going to be at the library at 7 o'clock and it's free to the public and you don't know who's going to walk in the door, well, you can look at, and so on the telephone you can't look at them, but then you can look at them and you kind of have a sense if they're old, young, or, you know, how they're dressed or how they're sitting or whatever. But also, generally, they often, lecturers will ask some questions. So, how many of you have, you know, children of your own? Or who, you know, have you, so sometimes that's why they will ask. Or, no, haven't you often been to lectures? And they always ask, or if it's a small group, go around the room and introduce yourself, or you introduce the person next to you, or so the teacher gets a sense, they get a sense of the audience just a little bit, and it can warm up the group. It can be a little warm-up of the group, and it also gives you that time to kind of see what you're working with.
Sure.
But if you're you've advertised at a New Age bookstore in Berkeley or something like that, you're going to kind of have a sense that these people are going to know quite a bit. They're going to have a clue about, you know, New Age stuff. if it's, you know, the ladies' club. I mean, I gave a talk at the, you know, the Yellowstone Club in Livingston, and they're all 75 to 85-year-old women. And so before I walked in, I knew who the audience would be, and most of them were, you know, rancher wives and everything.
What did you talk about?
Montessori, of course.
Oh.
But they invited me because we have three Montessori schools in Livingston, which is a dinky little town. So I went in and talked about Maria Montessori, the person, which is practically a contemporary of theirs because they're so old. And so, and how she led the women's movement, and, you know, in some areas. But anyway, they related to all that. So, and if it's just totally cold, you're on the telephone, you have no idea who's there. Well, you just fumble along.
Inspiration.
Give some thought to it, yeah. Look for clues.
You can pass out belief inventories, things like that, where you make a list of the beliefs that you think people might have about your topic one way or the other, and people can fill in, check which way they believe about something, and then you can have them, you can collect those and look through them at a break or something quickly, or you can have them discuss it in a small group, compare the inventories with each other, and walk around and listen over here what they're saying to each other while they're discussing it, so you can kind of get a feeling for, you know, which people are really strongly, you know, behind one idea or another. Or you could pass a little, you know, true and false test out in the beginning and, you know, ask for people to raise their hand if they thought something was true or false, or just, you know, just ways like that to kind of get a quick fix, you know, on your audience.
See if their arms and legs are crossed.
Okay, so we're going to move on, and what I'd like you to do now, if you would be willing to do this, is to take out a fresh piece of paper that you haven't written on and close all your materials, close out your computer, or just put it on pause, and then on your blank piece of paper, we'd like to ask you to create a concept map for everything you remember about teaching strategies from the last two classes. And we'll give you about 5 or 10 minutes to do this. And you can just write as quickly as you can, everything you can remember, and create a concept map. And this map, we're going to ask you to mail to us. So this is right at the top of your paper. Mail this. Okay, so you'll remember at the end of tonight which ones to mail. This is when we want to have mailed. So if we go off the line, we're going to end up losing our connection. Is that right, Sol? So we need to play a little music.
I better put some music on. Okay, let me find
so
a CD. To
thank you, Anita.
Some kind of brain-stimulating music.
Well, I'll look for
Mozart.
So we're doing a concept map with circles all over the place?
Yep, all over the place. Circles, lines, connections, nodes, chunks, all of that. Strands.
Celeste, are you going to want the pretest or just this post-test?
No, I didn't say anything about the pretest.
That's what I thought. Okay, just
I just want this one.
The circle in the middle says teaching strategies.
Circle in the middle says teaching strategies.
Celeste, you say 5 minutes?
Yeah, we'll start with 5 and see if you have any more time.
Can we have the music a little louder?
This is Elizabeth. I got cut off. I'm not sure the music was not loud enough.
No, Elizabeth, that has to do with the recording. You just got bumped off for some reason.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
last
card?
Just let me know when you're...
How is everybody doing? Do they need more time?
Yes. No.
We need more music, Anita.
Celeste, are we supposed to mail it to you?
Just a minute, I'll go over that, so.
Thank you.
Anybody still need time? Okay, I don't hear anybody asking for more time, so.
Yeah, let's hit the address. Let's get the address.
Let's get back on the phone, everybody. Can you ring your bell, Anita? Maybe that'll distract people. Buddhas are coming. The Buddhas are coming. Okay. So, does everybody have their syllabus in front of them? I'd like you to look at the second page of the syllabus where it says assignments down towards the bottom, the second page. There
yes.
are six numbers there, 1 through 6. Okay, we're going to go through those together right now, and I'm going to tell you what you need to do with each one of those numbers. Okay, so first of all, number one is concept map number one, which you did on the first night of class. Now, after tonight's class is over, or any time the next couple of days, compare your number one map with your number three map that you just finished working on tonight. Just compare them for your own sake. This is for you. And satisfy yourself that you actually learned something in this class. Okay, then you're going to just mail us the one we did tonight. Concept map number three. We do not want or need the concept map number one because that's your own personal assessment. What we're evaluating for ourselves, Anita and I, is what you remember from our instruction on teaching strategies. So that's why we're asking you to mail the concept map three. And you do not have to put your name on it if you don't like to, because we will never attach the map to you personally. We will only be looking at using our own rubric to evaluate. Just like you are using your rubrics, we're using our own rubric to evaluate our teaching strategy portion of this class. Anybody have any questions about that part so far? So just one more time, you're going to send us your concept map number three, but we do not want to have your concept map number one. Okay, then under the concept map number two, we do not need your concept map number two. All we need under two is your syllabus and your rubric, which is actually number four and five. So under two, we don't need your concept map. So So far you're only sending one thing, and that's the concept map number 3. Okay, then 4 and 5 are the syllabus and your rubric. We want both of those.
You want those mailed?
Okay, we want they're mailed. So you're going to be mailing four things, because the fourth thing that we want is the class evaluation for this class, which is the last sheet in your handout of the 10 pages, and it says course evaluation. Let me find it here. It says handout number 10, class assessment form, please evaluate this class, etc. Okay, so we'd like you to fill that in. So you actually are going to send us four things. First thing will be the concept map you just finished doing, number 3. And the next one would be your syllabus and the rubric that you created for your syllabus, and then the class evaluation. Okay, four things, and they'll be sent to me. My name is Celeste Miller. My address is 718 West 7th Street. 718 West 7th Street, Winona, which is spelled W-I-N-O-N-A, Minnesota, 55987. So put those into a manila folder and mail those at your convenience. When we've received all of the documentation for this class, then you will be issued your certificate. So even if it takes you till the end of January to finish all of this, at that point, when you send it to me, we will send you then the certificate of completion. And if you decide you don't want to do the assignments, then you just would have exited the class and you wouldn't receive a certification, but you would have benefited, hopefully, from auditing. Okay, so four assignments sent to Celeste Miller at 718 West 7th Street, Winona, Minnesota, 55987, at your convenience. And at the end of that process, we will send you your certificate. Any questions?
Celeste, are you going to critique our papers?
No. Okay. I am not going to critique your papers.
Okay. I have a question, Celeste.
Yes.
Has it been discussed in any way how Mayer University may be set up so that as we take these classes, get either certificates or units for them, that there's some kind of value in that in some way?
Well, we'll let the masters chime in. We haven't really gotten the whole matrix for how many of this would equal that or whatever. We'll just eventually, I'm sure it'll add up to something, but I can't tell you right now tonight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you going to use some of our syllabuses for future Mayer University courses?
No. What I thought we would do is we have our list of all of your topics, and after you have sent in your syllabus and your rubric, I thought we would create a list of people who are prepared to talk on topics, and I would send this list around to the teaching centers and encourage them to consider having weekend lectures, workshops, or whatever with these topics. And in addition, when we darshan with diversity.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So there's many ways that we can utilize our efforts here. But the most important thing I hope for you is that you will take this opportunity, now that you've done this rubric and your syllabus, that you'll take the opportunity then to go out and actually use it somewhere now. And work together, if you're in local areas, to, you know, try to provide opportunities for you to practice teaching, because you'll get better as you practice.
For the spiritual development of the people and for your own spiritual development.
Right.
What blesses one blesses all.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think that covers the assignments, unless there are any more questions. And then at this point, we'd like to spend the rest of the time hearing from you with 5-minute presentations. And whatever we don't cover tonight for the five-minute presentations, those of you who want to can come back on the 9th, and I'll come on the line, and you can we'll go through and with whoever's on the line, they can share then. Just so you get the chance to actually, you know, present. I think it's nice.
We love hearing you.
Yeah.
Because
they're all such great topics. It's just wonderful.
They're fabulous topics. And just think of, in 1 year, the quantity of workshops there's been through the Heart Center. I mean, even in 6 months. And all these topics are just wonderful, probably, for workshops. Oh. And you're there. You live in these places. So, okay, is Nancy Mueller with us tonight? She's not. Okay, let's see. Is Richard Lorenz?
Yes, he's here, but he's still not ready.
Is he ready? Well, you chose a big topic, Richard.
I know. It's a little inundating once I got into it.
Well, okay. See, isn't that good to, haven't you learned a lot, though?
Mm-hmm.
Now, his topic is the ladder of light from the Kabbalah. So, and to know the topic, he had to know it so well to figure out what it is that he could teach in 5 minutes.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I wanted to get a new concept that we, I guess, yeah. We normally wouldn't have gotten. We study the regular Kabbalah, but I wanted to,
yeah.
there's a ladder on which uses the Kabbalah that we know of, as there's about five parts of that.
Uh-huh.
You know, different levels and interconnections of that. And not that I'm starting now, but I'm not quite ready for that yet.
Okay. Well, so it's valuable to just go through this process of figuring out what you can you say. Is Pamela Gimbika with us?
Yes.
Hi, Pamela.
Hello. Hi.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
I am. My class is meditation and hatha yoga, and it's a class that's an ongoing work. I've actually done this class. And so this has been very enlightening to do it with you all, and it has improved. So I'll just start with the introduction.
Just go ahead, and I'll ring the bell in 5 minutes
okay.
if you're still talking, if that's okay.
And this actually was inspired by an ad in the New York Times for a spa. And I was thinking of an ad for it, and so this is how it goes. It's not what you come with, it's what you leave with. We all know the journey begins with the first step, and we all know that it's the journey that matters in the end. It's how our lives take shape, how our true nature is revealed. How do you find joy? The joy system of transformation, life enchantment seminars, and workshops will take you to an experience so light yet so powerful it will enhance your life forever. The first step of your journey begins with us. The power of transformation, life enchantment seminars, and workshops for self, families, businesses, and communities. This is a 6-week course. It's an interactive workshop. Beginner's meditation with gentle hatha yoga stretches to relax the body and the breath, to calm the mind, and induce a peaceful mind-body state for meditation practice. Everyone is welcome. It's an interfaith experience, so we're not excluding any religious affiliations. It's probably going to be a 2-hour class for 6 weeks. And I have just a little slogan that's called Just Breathe in little quotation marks. The purpose of the course will introduce aspiring students in the art of hatha yoga to relax the body, breathing techniques, and use of mantra to still the mind. It will teach you how to connect with your inner teacher and guide. It will bring you to experience peace and joy from within. This is a beginner's class, appropriate for ages 18 to adults, younger with parent permission, for everyone with any religious affiliation who wants to experience their divine connection to life. General objectives would be to demonstrate control of breath using specific techniques, to demonstrate simple hatha yoga postures or asanas, including the series Salutations to the Sun, to demonstrate chanting the mantra prior to meditation, in meditation in silence for 40 minutes to demonstrate growth or experience throughout the class through satsang, which is the sharing or journaling. My rubric categories, the first one would be breathing techniques. The student would show a low score if they couldn't do any breathing techniques or one technique. A medium score would be two techniques and a high score of three or more. Performing asanas, zero to three asanas would be a low score. A medium score would be three to five, and five or more would be a high score. Chanting and meditation, the student would just indicate, probably in writing, if it was beneficial or not, moderately beneficial to highly beneficial. And growth and experience, low score would be no growth, no experience, or below expectations. Medium would be meets expectations, and a high score would be exceeded their expectations. And that was something new that I hadn't done before with a class. So I like the rubric. I have sources of quotations that I read throughout the class as we're either in an asana or between them or during meditation, from Iyengar, Patanjali, and a video by Rodney Yee, who is a modern practitioner of Hatha Yoga. Also the Agni Yoga Society books and El Moya on the Heart. And there's also Ramana Maharshi, who has a method of inquiry that I use a lot of times to help students use the mind to understand meditation and to understand the heart and to get in touch with the heart.
Please tell me your name and where you live again.
I'm Pamela Gimbeka, and I live in Three Forks right now, Montana.
Montana, okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Pamela.
Thank you.
And you've given this before, so.
Yeah, this has changed it a bit.
Okay.
I have.
I wish I lived near you. Come to your class.
Yeah. Wonderful. You're all welcome.
The people in Three Forks go for this, huh?
I haven't taught it here. This is such a little town. It's only a few thousand. But I have taught it at the ranch for Chiwas.
You never know. You could just try and see who showed up.
Well, that's true. Actually, I have met people in Three Forks already who are asking me to teach them things. So.
Yeah. And you trust the interfaith. You trust the interfaith part. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go for it.
I will.
Okay. So, Jackie, is it Jackie Fletter, Fleeter? Which way? Is Jackie here? Okay. Yes?
I'm here. I just forgot that I was muted.
Oh, okay. Is it Fletter or Fleeter?
Fleeter.
Fleeter, okay.
Okay. So
are you ready to do ours?
Yeah, I'll do it.
Okay.
So I'm doing it on the chart of the Divine Self. And I'm doing it for my altar for souls. So that's my focus. So I've been practicing it, but anyways, I'll just do what I do.
Okay, great.
So first I ask the angels to project an image of your Buddha nature, that chart that you guys all know. So if you can imagine that, your own presence, your Buddha self, and your soul embalming in matter with your violet flame around it. So, I am come to awaken you. I am come with Saint Anthony, Kuan Yin, and Mother Mary. I am come to tell you you were created in light, and light is your true and holy path. In the beginning, God created you in his image. This chart is the chart of your Buddha nature. There are three components in the chart. The first part is the I Am Presence. The second part in the middle is your Holy Christ Buddha Self. The third part is the soul evolving in matter in the bottom figure. You your I Am presence is your personalized God's presence created by God for us. It is a replica of our Father, Mother, God. It possesses all the qualities of God and allows us to create as God creates. The rings in the I Am presence, around the I Am presence, are the spheres of light that store our souls positive momentum and talent. This I Am presence floats between 7 and 70 feet above our head. The bottom figure is our soul evolving in matter. When we were first created by God, we were one with God and lived in a state of bliss. But at some point, our soul wanted to experiment in matter and its ability to create and ensoul matter. So the soul went out to the matter cosmos to experiment. No doubt that you created many beautiful things in matter. But at some point, your soul contacted imperfection and lost contact with the I Am presence. Because your I Am presence, your God presence, the top figure, only beholds positive creation. It doesn't behold negative creation. And so when your soul began creating negativity, you lost your connection, and you became enmeshed in this imperfect creation. Your soul fell asleep and forgot its potential to create as God is create and to be in that state of bliss. So God foresaw this, and he created this middle figure, which is your Buddha self, your Holy Christ Buddha self. And your Holy Christ Buddha self acts as mediator between to bridge the gap between the perfect creation and the perfect world of the I Am presence and your imperfect creation in matter. Now, the goal of your life on earth is to become one with your Holy Christ self, Buddha self, while cleaning up the negative creation. When negative creation is cleaned up, or negative creation is negative karma, is balanced, you can reunite with God. You can do this in the process that's called the ascension. The ascended masters, such as Kuan Yin, Mother Mary, and other saints and Buddhas, have already walked this path on earth and have united with their God presence, their I Am presence. You can call on your Holy Christ Buddha self to guide you back to oneness. And you can just say, Buddha self, Holy Christ self, please come teach me the path of light. Please help me return to that state of oneness. You can ask your Holy Christ Buddha self for guidance, and you can ask it for inspiration to help you remember your divine plan and purpose in life. Also, you can call to the ascended masters or the saints for guidance. The ones you are most familiar with are the best choice, like Gautama Buddha or Kuan Yin. You say, beloved Kuan Yin, please guide me and help me return to oneness, to dissolve my negative creation. Now, a way to accelerate this process of transmuting your negative creation is to invoke the violet flame. And you see the violet flame around the bottom figure, your soul evolving in matter on this chart. The violet flame is a flame created by God. It's from the heart of God, and it's used to transmute negative momentum. You can say the mantra, I am a being of violet fire and the purity God desires, to invoke this fire. So everybody say, I am a being of violet fire and the purity God desires.
God desires.
I am a being of
violet fire. I am the purity God desires.
I
am a being of violet
fire.
I am
the purity God desires.
Jackie, you know what? I was ringing the bell, but I was muted.
Okay.
What is the sound of a bell with no clapper?
That's it. Muted.
Okay, very nice.
Thank you, Jackie. That was a lot of information, wasn't it?
Yeah, I know. It's like maybe I should slow it down or something.
Oh! I don't know.
I'm always amazed when I hear all of you, what you can say in 5 minutes. Because, you know, my classes are 50 minutes and an hour and a half long, and I'm thinking to myself, good heavens, they must be an overload after 5 minutes. I mean,
yeah.
Because 5 minutes is about, you know, what my brain is doing these days.
Well, they say that 15 minutes is all people can handle.
Right.
So, you know, before they have to do something different.
Yeah.
But she got us doing a mantra, so that was great.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. So, is Linda Dowell with us? Linda?
She's here.
Linda? Is she on the secret ray?
No, she signed in.
Oh, she did. Okay. If yeah. Linda's here, she has elementals as a topic, but maybe we'll hear from her. How about Ronaldo Dabrowski? Are you here, Ronaldo?
Maybe we should go the other way and say, who would like to present?
Yeah, I think we will.
Okay, I'm here.
Who's that?
It's Linda.
Linda. Linda, are you going to tell us about elementals?
I am. I was talking away and realized that I really hadn't unmuted. I thought I had, but I hadn't.
Okay, I understand. Okay, well, you're here. Good.
Okay. My audience would be a little bit mixed, with mainly it would be like a lecture where people might come in off in the street not really knowing that much about elementals. And I would have handouts to give them and like a few pictures of overhead projection like Cicely Barker with her flower fairies.
Oh, yeah.
And if I had enough time, I would like to actually show segments from Fantasia, you know, Walt Disney's Fantasia. And I would start out by sort of asking people questions after I made a first comment, something like this. I would say, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My topic is elementals, and I'm sure that some of you are asking, what in the world are elementals? Well, the word elementals is a term from the Great White Brotherhood, or in other words, the Ascended Masters. Some of you might know elementals by the name of nature spirits. You've all heard of fairies, elves, dwarves, mermaids, gnomes, dwarfs. And I can go on and on. All you have to do is think about what it was like when you were growing up in school, even going into college. Now, can anyone tell me name a famous fairy or even a famous author who's talked about some of these things? Now, that's right. You've got Tinkerbell. She is a fairy from Peter Pan. And you've got in your children's literature. Can people hear me?
Yeah, we're getting static, so I have to speak up a little bit.
Okay. Even when you get into high school and college, you got famous authors such as Shakespeare. Does anyone remember what play has fairies in it that Shakespeare wrote about?
Midsummer Night's Dream.
Right. Now, does anyone know that Homer in Odyssey, he wrote about fairies? Now, we can go on and on, naming famous authors and so on. And with all of these different names that people are acquainted with, they're just sometimes they're names for the same thing, such as brownies. That name comes from Scotland. Everybody knows that leprechauns come from Ireland. Now, who made dwarfs famous? Walt Disney. He's the one that brought elementals out into the open. Now, other famous authors are like Hans Christian Andersen and Brothers Grimm. And I could go on there to make it longer, but I would cut it short because you could go on and on. Now, there is a saying, you all know about it, where there's smoke, there's a fire. Now, all of these names, stories, legends, this is the smoke. You know what the fire is? It's the real nature, spirits, or elementals. There are basically five categories. They're the air, earth, fire, water, air, and the body elemental. The main topics I want to cover today have to do with the earth, fire, water, and air. Now, the main question is, what are elementals? What's their purpose? How do they relate to us in the world? Well, the elementals, they're the body of God in manifestation. They're actually fragments of the Lord's body. They're called the builders of form. They have this task of bringing into manifestation the intents of God and man. Their purpose is to transform the essence of the Holy Ghost to man that he might receive and absorb through nature the energies of the living word. Now, some of you might have wondered why you love hiking or mountain climbing or going canoeing. You just know that you like it. Well, what you're doing is absorbing the Holy Spirit. This is the, oh, was that the bell?
That was the bell.
Oh, okay.
The Holy Spirit.
Right.
Got a winner there.
Boy, that's a six-week class, isn't it?
Yeah, that's great.
Right. I figured it'd take at least 2-hour-long lectures. It might actually take longer.
Mm-hmm.
And the more, because there is actually so much in literature that we would call nature spirits, that is really fascinating.
Well, you know what you did, Linda, is that you went, you did a very wonderful Montessori principle. That's a principle of many other things, but I call it a Montessori principle, is that you went from the known to the unknown. So you took the people where was something that they knew and that was their experience and their knowledge, and helped them go another step. And instead of just starting out cold with new information, expecting them to believe it, you helped them move from the known to the unknown. And that's a wonderful thing to do in our teachings, because everybody has something,
right?
You know, and to help them move just a little bit more to help their development.
Right.
So I liked what you said, when there's smoke, there's fire.
Right.
That's cool.
If I could add something, I know I'd certainly like to give a lecture on this. There's a video out that you can get at Blockbusters. I think it's called The Real Fairy Story or something like that. You can even describe it. It was created in England. And author Sherlock Holmes?
Sir Conan Doyle.
He's in it and talks about his father doing drawings of fairies, et cetera, et cetera. A piece of the video and show it to them.
Right, that sounds good.
The name of the video is Fairy Tale.
Okay, thanks.
Fairy. A true story. Yeah.
A true story, yeah.
Yeah.
I've shown it a couple of times to my art students, little bits and pieces.
Okay, let's have another wonderful talk.
Okay. And who would like to volunteer?
Isabel?
There's someone who would like to volunteer?
Isabel, can you hear me?
Oh, yes, we can hear you.
Oh, good.
Okay. My topic is the law of karma.
The law of karma?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay.
So I start now.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. We hear the word karma almost everywhere. It is almost becoming a household word, but its meaning is not always clearly understood. What it really means, why it matters, and how to deal with it. Some people think it's related to one's luck, fate, or destiny. But karma is very far away from a random event. In fact, it's a very precise law, and understanding how it works is very important for anybody's spiritual path. Science and philosophies of the world declare that the law of cause and effect is the most universal of all laws. No event can occur without having a definitive cause behind it. This universal law of causation is called in Sanskrit the law of karma. This word means act, action, or deed, which also includes any thought, feeling, and every spoken word. Although the word karma has an Eastern origin, the Western world also has some understanding of karma when we say, what goes around, comes around. In the Bible, in Galatians 6:7, we read, wherever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Every action we do is the result of a cause, but at the same time, it is the effect of some cause, and that again produces some effect and again a cause. And so on and on, the chain of cause and effect continues without coming to an absolute end. For instance, a president of a company with family. Someone shoot him and kill him. Here, shooting is the action which is the effect of the mental and physical activities of the killer. The death of his person causes his wife not only pain, grief, but she becomes a widow, which produces change in her life and in the family. Also, in his company, all the decisions are going to be different, and at the top of all this, he can carry this trauma to the next life. So the actions are cause and effect at the same time. The law of karma say that our thoughts, words, and deeds create a chain of cause and effect. Under this law, there is no room for chance or accident. What we call happening by chance or accident is in reality the product of some causes we may not know with our limited knowledge. In ancient times and also ancient times, to explain certain events, we attribute them to some supernatural power or forces, sometimes called providence, sometimes as punishment by an angry god. But all events or accidents are just the result of the law of causation or law of karma. This law includes other laws, the law of action and reaction, or that every action must be followed by a reaction of similar nature, like attracts like. Also the law of circle or law of cycle. This spiritual law says that what you send to others, it will come back to you sometimes soon, sometimes after a certain time, and even in another life. Everything that we possess is the effect of our previous action. Our character, our skills, our challenge, who we are, have been created with our actions. Our present is the result of our past action, and our future will be determined by our present acts. Neither God nor Satan, neither parents nor loved ones are responsible for our pain or pleasure, happiness or unhappiness. Everything can be explained by the law of karma. Our beloved mother, Elizabeth the Prophet, taught us that also sometimes people volunteer to carry karma for a planet, a nation, other people for a past acceleration in their path. The conclusion is that a believer in the law of karma is a free person, and he's responsible for all the good or bad results from his own actions. He knows that he creates his own destiny and shapes his own character by his thoughts and deeds. He never blames another for the suffering and circumstances which come to him. The one who knows and obeys the law of karma will avoid doing anything wrong, not because it's written in a book or someone tells him what to do, but because he knows that every wrong action will sooner or later react upon him and will make him unhappy. Vice versa, doing good things will bring better future to him. Let's be more aware of the true intention in our actions so we can have better choices for improving our character and spiritual path. I finish here. I didn't have more subjects.
Isabella, that was great. What are you going to put down for your references? I'm just curious.
Oh, yeah. I took a little from the Spiritual Quest from the Sacred Adventures series.
Okay.
And the Karma Reincarnation, very little, from Elizabeth the Prophet.
Okay.
And I took most of them for Doctrine of Karma from Swami Abhayadananda.
Okay, great.
So she could reference them in the talk, saying, according to Swami,
right,
whatever his name is.
Yeah, well, you know, what I did is I read this and this and that, and then I put together. So
that's
I'm
very
not
good.
Sure if I really copy exactly, you know, word by word.
Yeah, that's good.
Are, so I get inspired about these three books.
Uh-huh, very good. Who else would like to go?
Thank you, Isabel. Plus, I'll remind you that the class is supposed to be over at 8:30.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Nice talk. It's so great. Okay, I'm so sorry, buddy. Well, I know some of you have packing to do. What should we do together as an invocation? We can all share in, even though we're not hearing at the same exact moment, but something we could give together that would be a ceiling for this class and this night.
How about the living liquid crystal of light?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that.
That'd be good. Do we want to sing it or do we want to say it? Let's say it three times and sing it one time, and then we'll all, when we sing it, we'll all wish each other a wonderful happy holiday Christmas season and meet you all back online, I guess, in January on the 9th.
And meet you at prayer sessions. It's so exciting to have all the different cities now having your sessions. The Saturday night St. Germain service was magnificent. I want to thank whoever was doing that, Damian and many others, wonderful. And then Detroit and Chicago is just marvelous. So we see each other. We're together. We're decreeing together all the time. Isn't that great?
It is.
Nita, do you want to lead tonight?
Who?
You can lead, Anita.
Okay.
Because then you can sing it at the end.
I'm not sure if I know how to say it. Okay. I live, move, and have my being in a living liquid crystal diamond of light. I live, move, and have my being in a living liquid crystal diamond of light. I live, move, and have my being in a living liquid crystal diamond of light. I live and move and have my being in a living liquid crystal diamond of light. Christmas light to you all.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you
for praying for us when
you
go to Taiwan.
That was really good. Thanks so much.
Have a wonderful trip.
Bye.
Bye.
God bless you.
God bless everyone.
Bye.